Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
This is a special edition of the Sci-Fi and Screens podcast.
This single blade did what we could not. It has brought us together. This blade has spilled the blood of Jafar, of the Tok'ra, and of the Tari. By the hand of our common enemy, it has made us brothers. Together, we have ensured it will never spill our blood again.
This is Sonia from Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9, the only LGBTIQ A and Z for zombies radio show of the speculative genre pop culture variety called Sci-Fi and Scream. Thank you. And welcoming Tony Amendola. Of course, Tony is possibly one of the biggest sci-fi TV personalities, characters, actors. What hasn't he been in? Pretty much. In the universe. Welcome to Australia and to Armageddon and Melbourne, Tony.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
An American actor, of course. You're best known for your role in the Stargate versus SG-1, naturally. But you've got, you know, you've got a theatrical background, I believe, and a lot of experience there. Bringing that to science fiction and in the television format. Tell us, what keeps you excited or what kept you going with Stargate?
First of all, you never know when you first go into a project that it's how long it's going to last. It may be over in the next episode. I mean, I did Sarah Connor's Chronicle, Terminator, over in, I loved it. I thought it was terrific.
Very well written.
Yeah, and I was also in Doll's House. Right?
That's right. The list is huge.
You know, I thought, terrific concept and interesting idea, Dollhouse. And so we never know. So consequently, they have Stargate and then go up and do an episode and to be invited back and for it to go on as long as it did, it's a gift. I mean, it's not, I'd love to tell you that I choose these. And I'm able to cherry pick the ones that are going to last, but it's not true. You just get lucky so often. And Stargate is one of those experiences that has been terrific. The fans have been great. They created a wonderful character for me. As a matter of fact, one of the creators of that character, along with, Brad, was a guy named Jeff King, who I did a show called Continuum, and he sort of helped create my character with Simon Barry on that. So it's a strange, small world. So my longevity, I don't know. I just, follow the work and hope that it interests me and hope that I can keep going. And so far, so good. So.
You have. I mean, it's impressive. I mean, you just mentioned Dollhouse, and I wasn't even going to touch on that. Of course, Joss Whedon.
Yes.
And you've been involved in so many things. Space and Beyond, even Charmed, which is a guilty pleasure of mine. Of course, most recently, Dexter. Tell us about that. I mean, it's gone now, but...
Dexter was... It's a great, great character. As a matter of fact, it's sort of interesting because he's the man who made Dexter who he is because he killed his mother, of course. Mm. But he doesn't... He just was doing his... I don't want to say he was doing his job, but he was involved in the underworld and had to do some really, really nasty stuff because he's a very nasty man to begin with.
Yes.
When that sort of revisited, it was actually great working with Michael because it was an interesting scene because he knew who I was and I had no idea who he was. And we just sort of battered each other for, a good 12 hours. I went home that night and had a strong toddy with a little muscle relaxant, but I really like the show. It's quite a scary show.
Yeah.
I often wonder what shows like that, tell us about ourselves and, contemporary. I mean, they're positively Jacobean in some ways.
Yes.
And, Dexter was great fun. And, I got to be dragged sort of nude in Saran wrap. Dexter wrap into
do they sell that in shops or Costco's now?
Oh, they probably do. Well, I'll tell you, that's tough.
Yeah.
I mean, because you're wrapped in, and if you have to go, you have to go. You're there.
Okay.
it's a terrific experience, but it is odd to have someone with a chainsaw over your body.
Very physical. So a lot of your roles are very physical.
Right.
Do you come from a very energetic physical background? Did you?
No, you try to keep in shape, and when you're if you train in school, you have various sort of disciplines. You have you do Tai Chi and you do martial arts. I'm not a martial arts guy, but train for the concentration within that, and you do a lot of stage combat, which serves you well. And they have terrific stunt people. On Stargate, I did a fair amount. Every so often they won't let you do something.
Too dangerous.
It's too dangerous, and you can always tell when they let you do it. It's right, at the end of the shoot when they don't need you anymore, and you can convince them. But that, that's been true in Zorro too. That's been true in a lot of. You do have to be sensitive to that.
And because you have had such a long and varied career, at any time did you feel you were being typecast a little bit?
Well, to be honest, it's very important to know what your type is to get into the front door of this business. This business is very quick and it's very competitive.
To judge and categorize.
Yes.
It.
So you need to know what you look like and who you are. It would have been, regardless of, if whatever amount of goodness there is in any actor's heart, if in their person that is not presented to casting people, they would beat their heads against the wall trying to play. You go in, you play what you look like for a while, and in the back door, you're making plans to go against it. I mean, I had a wonderful experience this past year. In Continuum, I was playing sort of a political, quite violent political leader.
That's Edward
Kagami.
Right? Kagami,
And at the same time, and this is a man who leads with his mind.
Yes.
It's very much sort of loosely based, I want to say this, it's based on the Occupy movement gone quite violent. This is not,
I don't want to. It's a very interesting way to take it,
And at the same time, I was playing Geppetto in Once Upon a Time.
No.
So now, ordinarily I wouldn't get cast as Geppetto. It's just with a certain amount of work and age, I started out playing goes and weirdos and drug dealers and low lives. And then, you get older and you play wackos and weirdos with money.
Yeah.
Now they're more successful, and then eventually you'll get a chance to play different things. I mean, for instance, there's a role that I loved in Babylon 5, Crusade.
I was just about to say that,
Where I was playing a guy who you suspected to be the typical thing. You suspected him, to be a world criminal, and you come to find out he's guarding the culture of his planet.
Yeah.
And so often, so you do, to get back to your question, you have to accept what you look like.
Yep.
And as you get more power, you get to expand more.
Excellent. So it's almost like those great character actors that, we all grew up on, but in television, because Sci-Fi Television Channel has done some amazing, brilliant pioneering work. Mm-hmm. And you're certainly one of those actors who's played, a significant part of this pioneering phenomenon that is sci-fi TV. And especially now, look, for geeks, it's just marvelous. And you've really helped, I think, bring that to become more mainstream.
Well, it's my pleasure.
It's my raving.
Anytime I can help a geek, I go out of my way.
Help a geek. Save a geek.
Yeah, it's sort of like, the Boy Scouts. A Boy Scout model, to help people across the street.
Yeah.
I help geeks any way I can.
Yeah, well, you do. Because the characters that you do are sometimes very, very conflicted, and they go through a lot of different changes, and physical as well as emotional and psychological. And I think that really is reflected in the geek culture, because sometimes, we're the outsiders, we used to be, the fringe dwellers in culture itself and artistic culture and so on. That's changing. Have you seen Have you seen a change?
Oh, yeah,
popularity
without question. Yep. This is, if you will, you can use the metaphor that this is the golden age of geeks. This, you know, really,
yeah,
if, in 20
so?
Years, oh, absolutely. You know, I mean, I think there was a time when media was not even aware, or they just thought it was this fringe.
Just guys buying comics,
yeah,
selling comics,
you know,
out of the boot of the car.
Now, forget it. I mean, you know, people are very aware, and rightfully so, because very loyal, very committed, very intelligent audience, and they tend to be repeat viewers. You know,
not just repeat, you know, they'll download it,
yes,
which people say, oh, you can't do that because that's, you know, you're not paying for it. They don't realize that a geek will not just download it, but they will then go and buy it when the box set comes out. But not just the one box set, every version after that. And then watch it when it's on free to air.
The 10th anniversary and 20th and 30th anniversary. You're absolutely right.
It's crazy, but it's good. And
it is good.
We love it.
Well, you know,
are you a geek? Actually, I don't know.
You know, I have been infected, you know, but I wouldn't
geeky.
Call myself, but I you know, I do have a little bit of geekdom, but it was developed through you guys. I wouldn't say when I came in that I was a geek. I was more of, you know, I played sports and, you know, I wasn't particular, but gradually you guys are contagious.
Ooh,
so
contagion.
I would say I definitely have a little bit of geekdom.
All right. So out of all of those wonderful in the geekverse, all the roles you play, do you have a favorite, a personal favorite?
Well, I would have, you know, I'd have to say Braytak, just simply because it, you know, lasted so long. And the experience, you know, so often you go on a set and you do one or two episodes, you really don't know that many people.
That it's going to be around.
Yeah, you have no idea.
Season? Yeah.
And to be part of something that was, you know, iconic and lasted so long, and just to go on set and to know everyone and build sort of deeper relationships, I would have to say that probably is the one.
Braytak, yeah. Well, we love even the costumes. Awesome.
Yeah.
Cozzy, tell us about getting into character and the costumes, the makeup, all those things.
Well, you know, that's very important. I mean, that's two of the things, you know. You go up, you've been hired for a role, you sort of understand it, and then I'm always waiting to meet the costume person because I'm looking for clues to sort of, because you haven't stepped on set as this person yet. So particularly in the first episode, it's very interesting. I was lucky to have a director whose name was Mario Azzopardi, who's a Maltese from, I think he lives in Toronto, but he was from Malta. And he was a very big bear of a man. So, you know, and he pushed me, you know, he helped sort of shape Braytak. And so there's a little bit of him in Braytak. And, you know, the wardrobe designer, Christine, you know, I thought, oh, I get it. He's a samurai medieval Roman stoic warrior, you know, and then, you know, and then...
The
boots, and all of a sudden you think, well, I don't have to act this guy's stature. Look at what they've dressed me in, you know.
And Julius Caesar.
And Julius Caesar.
They were short.
Yeah, you know, exactly. And they had, you know, beautiful capes and, you know, wraparound. And, you know, it all feeds. You try to come in and create something. And it's funny because you may have only been with the material three or four days or a week or, you know, and there it is. It's going to be on film. So it's nerve-wracking at the beginning because you do want to take those first three or four steps are very important. So, but you trust your director and the writers, of course. They're the ones that have the arc. It's very interesting because as I was talking about the show Continuum that Simon Barry created, and Jeff King was one of the producers as well, Pat Williams. But what was interesting is that I was playing this mastermind. So they let me read the Bible of the show. And the Bible is sort of the rules and what the ideas are. They let me read it. And as we progressed, in the very last episode, we got to a scene where they turned it completely around on me. So I didn't even know what was going on. And that was wonderful.
That's quite,
you know,
sadistic.
No, it's wonderful because sometimes if you know too much as an actor, you end up you end up playing ahead. And they didn't tell me. But what I read, I could not tell the other castmates.
Right.
You know, so it was very interesting. And sometimes, you know, that was actually an exception. Very often, you know, people won't let you... They won't tell you anything.
That's very Hitchcock, actually.
Yeah, it is.
It was Alfred Hitchcock was playing, messing with his cast mind, I think, particularly when Psycho was going to come out.
Well, you know, there are some directors, particularly, you know, European, and obviously Hitchcock was British, but, you know, who do what has been a tradition for a long, long time, which is when an actor gets a part, they only get their sides. They only get the part of the movie or play. Like in Shakespeare's time, you only got, if you were an actor, you got the scenes with cues, the scenes you were in, two or three lines of cues, and then your part. Now, that's very interesting because, you know, as a contemporary modern actor, we're looking for clues and want to...
Yeah,
but actually,
yeah,
if you don't know what's coming up, you really have to pay attention.
And so it's less about... Yeah, I guess that way it makes you really be on your toes.
It makes you be on your toes, and you can't anticipate stuff, you know. I mean, you know, I like it... I like just trying to understand how... You know, we're there to really serve the producers, the writers, and the directors. And if we can get some creativity beyond that, then you know, we're lucky. But, you know,
it's worked, yeah.
So I just need to understand how the people work, you know. I've had, you know, Jonathan Glasner and Brad Ride and Simon Barry and Jeff King and Pat Williams and, you know, the people on Dexter. And, you know, they all communicate with you. They make you feel like you're part of the show. You know, and that's all I ask.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Wow. Whoa, Tony. What can I say? Seriously, what a wonderful experiences you've had over a career that spanned how many years, roughly decades now?
Well, God, I started... acting professionally since 77 or so.
Right.
But not always in film and television. You know, I mean,
you've got your theater experience has come through.
I got really from 78 till about 92, that's all I was geared towards. You know, I belonged to a lot of the rep companies that were, it was a wonderful life. It doesn't quite exist now, you know, to have a season of plays, to be an actor not looking for work, but preparing for the next role that you know you've been cast in.
Yeah.
It's quite rewarding. LA is a whole different thing. LA is...
So you are from the New York, are you from the eastern side of
I grew up,
the US?
I grew up back east.
Yeah, but, okay. So that is quite, I believe that's quite a different sort of...
Yeah, but actually my theater stuff was in the west.
Oh, okay.
You know? So, you know, there's a lot of, there's a very much... You know, like a rep circuit that exists in England. There's a circuit in that you can go from place to place to place, and you can earn a respectable living.
What
it's union
it stock.
Work.
Is it stock?
It's not stock. Is more a very very short rehearsal, very very quick.
Okay.
A play a week, a play every 2 weeks.
Right.
These are called regional theaters or rep theaters, where you know, you rehearse for a month, you perform for a month, you rehearse for a month, you perform for a month, and often you might be doing both. So you rehearse a play, perform a play,
that's
and while
energy.
You're performing, you're rehearsing.
That's a
yeah,
lot
it's
of...
for young people.
Not
but
for you
but
anymore.
What a wonderful thing.
Yeah, well, you know? Television's come along, and thankfully sci-fi TV, and that's why we are very pleased and happy that we have someone like you, Tony Amendola, from the Stargate universe and many other things, obviously, Once Upon a Time, more recently, Dexter as well in recent times. What's next?
Well, you know, I'm still, I did some more work on Continuum, and I'm hoping to go back to Once Upon a Time.
Very good.
And I'm on the hunt.
See how it...
Living and looking.
The apple falls.
You know, they say, you know, as actors, they say, they pay us for watching, waiting, and worrying. The acting is actually free.
All right, Tony, thank you so much for talking to us here on Sci-Fi and Squeam for Joy 94.9. Thank you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Oh, Squeam with a Q. Yep.
That's squeamish.
Squeam, like...
Squeamish.
Nausea.
Squeam.
Yeah, vomity.
On Joy 94.9.
That's it. Thank you.
Do you want my name or anything?
Yes.
Or just,
oh, yes. What? Yeah.
And I want to welcome you to Sci-Fi and Squeam.
That'll be cool.
Okay.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Tony Amendola, and I want to welcome you to Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9.
That's very good. Beautiful. Thank you very much.
Hi, this is Tom O'Panikid, and you're listening to Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.